remember at this point, capital was not successful. The best managers are the ones who inspire. We all wanted to be a Kenny Everett. He never acted like he was a true great.
Conversations, an occasional radio moment series in which you hear from those who made a difference. Graham Dean.
I grew up in northwest London, in Hendon. Then I moved to Barnet in Hertfordshire, and I'm very close to there now. I was an only child. My parents actually were quite old when they had me. Something that I copied as well, I have to say. I always thought I'll never be an old parent. And what happens? I'm actually older than they were when they had me, which was about 39 or 40 years old. But it was never a lonely existence. I was probably spoilt. Academically, I really wasn't very good at anything. I think one of the reasons for that is that it depends on what teachers you have. I remember very, very well wanting to learn languages, and I took German. The teacher was remarkable, absolutely gelled with me, and I thought, this is it, this is great. I then changed teachers to somebody who I didn't gel with, just wasn't right for me, and I ended up knowing less German at the end of that second year than I did at the end of the first year, and subsequently flunked the exam. My nickname was Titch, but it was always done very nicely. I was never bullied for being small. I was always a bit different, and with the music, for instance, you know, it was all Beatles and Rolling Stones, whereas I was the Beach Boys. I love vocal harmony. Ask me what I'm good at. I can pick out a good vocal harmony. We formed a little group, actually, called the Malibus, to tie in with California and the Beach Boys. And we used to sing these harmonies. And we did a very good version of Moon River and Smile, Charlie Chaplin's Smile, all in four-part close harmony.
It's 3:15. Time for Listen with Mother.
The first time that I noticed radio, I would say about 3 or 4 years old, and we lived in flats, and the people below, lovely guy, I called him Uncle Eric. He wasn't a real uncle, but he had what we would term now as a very vintage radio. And that was the first time I heard a voice coming out of a box. And being very, very young, and for some reason, this must be one of the earliest memories I can go back on. I remember walking round the back of the box and thinking, well, where is this person? Why isn't there somebody there who I've heard speaking?
Night of Fear from the Move. That's number 9 in the Fab 40 charts. 9 or 10, let me see. Yes, it's number 10. I was wrong first time. 25 before 2 o'clock is the time. This is the Mike Lennox Show, where we've got happy sound of music until 3 o'clock. Single Girl, Sandy Posey. The single
girl. But it was at school that I first found the spark that took me into radio, because during break time, I used to really look forward to 11 o'clock break. It was the era of the pirates on the ships, and I used to take my Marmite sandwiches 11 o'clock and listen to Pirate Radio London, and listening to all that terrific music. And as I say, that really lit something up inside of me, and I thought, this is what I have to do. It wasn't just being on the radio, it was, you know, the swinging 60s. And I don't think the swinging 60s, with all that wonderful music, would have swung as much had it not been for the pirate radio stations.
The Single Girl, Sandy Posey. That's her follow-up to Born a Woman, number 17 in the Fab 40 charts this afternoon. Cat Stevens had a big first success with I Love My Dog, and on the DRAM label, he's back. A Radio London climber called Matthew and Son.
I remember at school there was a form called the Bench. Now, the Bench housed the people who were never going to pass any exams. And guess what form I was put in? Yes, the Bench, which was slightly insulting. As you can tell, I probably never got over it. My parents sent me out of that first school into a crammer, and they crammed me. They were brilliant teachers. I remember having to travel on the tube, so I was about 16 years old, to Holland Park every day. These teachers, for them it was a vocation. They were the greatest of the great. It cost my parents a fortune. But in the end, I got 3 more O-levels, all in all, 5. So no great shakes. I decided at that point that A-levels were not for me. Let's get a job. Now, the pirates had sparked my radio imagination. I thought, this is what I want to do. But when it came to leaving school, around about 1967, that was really the end of that first wave of pirate stations, pun intended, by the way. So I thought, well, what can I do? Radio, there's nothing else really. BBC. So I applied to get into the BBC, and to my surprise, they took me. And so I worked there as a clerk for 3 years. First of all, I was in their audience research department, and I was in the Langham, which at that point was a BBC building. The BBC Club was housed there as well. These days, it's a 5-star hotel. And if you know Portland Place, as you go down towards the BBC and the Langham faces you, there are 2 bay windows on the first floor. And my first office was the one on the right. And I was in that for a couple of years. And then they asked me, would I like to go to the library, which was housed in BH? And I thought, this is fantastic. I'm getting closer to music. But it wasn't the music library, it was the book library. However, you know, good things can come from disappointments. And again, I was there, I was a clerk filling out orders for periodicals and newspapers for various BBC programmes. It wasn't the most exciting job in the world. I remember I had a little portable radio, which I perched on my desk. I've still got it. I used to listen to the Pirates, Radio North Sea International in those days. I think Roger Day was still on. And even though our government was jamming them, I thought, this is better than listening to the BBC. So there I am in a BBC office listening to an illegal pirate radio station. Our boss was in the office next door, and she was the archetypal BBC auntie type. I'll never forget her name because I had to type it so many times on these requisition orders. And her name was Miss HME Bailey. She was a bit stern. I had to really be quick with the off button on the little portable radio. She knew I had it. She knew what I was doing. She was kind.
9 o'clock on Radio North Sea International.
So I was saying nice things come from disappointments, because next door to my office was a huge sort of open plan office. I think it was on the second floor of BH, as it was then. They housed all the magazines and the newspapers that came in every day. And I asked them, would it be possible for me to take the music magazines around to the Radio 1 offices? And you know something? That was the best question I ever asked. They said, yeah, if you'd like to. It saves them doing it. So at lunchtimes, I think it was on a Wednesday, I'd take all the music magazines around to Radio 1. And I'd meet people there. Actually, they had the programme in the early days of Radio 1, Sounds of the 70s. I got to know somebody there who was in charge of doing all the voice work, and he let me do a promo for Sounds of the 70s, which you can imagine I was made up about.
And now, Sounds of the 70s with John Peel.
Hello and welcome to yet another...
When I was working as a clerk there, I met up with a lovely producer there at the time, a fellow called Malcolm Brown, and he knew I was just busting to be a DJ. And kindly, in his own time, he took me down into the bowels of the BBC, plonked me in the studio and did an audition tape with me. And a week or so later, I got told to go to Mark White's office. Now, Mark White was very much part of the high command at BBC Radio. Lovely, lovely guy. I seem to remember white-haired. And I went to see him. And I thought, whoa, what is this about? He'd heard the audition tape. He said, I think you've really got something here. And I thought, I don't believe what I'm hearing. And you know something? I shouldn't have believed what I heard, because I never saw him again. And I don't think it was him, but it was probably someone lower down the command who didn't agree with him. Hence, I was never on Radio 1. But obviously, when I was working there, and I worked there when Radio 1 started, I was in the office peering out of the window, looking at that famous All Souls picture where all the DJs, the first DJs on Radio 1 were. I saw that, and I so wanted to be on those steps.
It's a holiday.
It's a happy day.
On wonderful Radio 1.
Wonderful Radio 1.
I also met somebody there who would change the course of my career, really, because his name was Neil Spence. And Neil Spence was doing some holiday relief round at Radio 1 and Radio 2, again on the promo side. And Neil Spence had been a pirate DJ on Pirate Radio London. He was called Dave Dennis. He was known as the Double D, which people of a certain age, they will remember Dave Dennis.
And now the time on the breakfast show is exactly 8 o'clock.
At 8 o'clock, another Radio London news service. News in brief.
Having got to talk to him about radio and, you know, how much I'd love to be a DJ in the future, he rang me in the office And he said, you still want to be a DJ? I said, well, yeah. And I thought, well, gosh, is it going to be another pirate ship on the high seas? But no, it was the start of UBN, the United Biscuits Network, where Neil Spence was the first program controller. An industrial broadcasting station. It ran between 1970 and 1974, and I joined them right at the beginning. It was a fantastic station. It was run so professionally. We had the Top Gear. We had great jingles from Dallas, the Pams jingles, based on the old Big L Radio London jingles.
Anytime is a good time on Super Sound UBN.
We were just in seventh heaven. A learning curve for us. UBN had a great number of people who would then go on to form the basis of independent local radio. And it wasn't meant to be doing that. It was meant to be entertaining people who made biscuits and, again, had very laborious jobs. There they were at around about 12 biscuit factories that were owned by United Biscuits. And four of them decided to take a radio station. How's a radio station? Because the staff turnover rate was about 80%. And so they trained all these people, you know, to make bickies and cakes, and they lost them very quickly. So somebody came up with the bright idea of having an in-house radio station. We started off at Austerley, which was one of their factories, their headquarters at the United Biscuits, where Sky is now, of course. Sky is on the right-hand side, sort of down a little road to the right, which was, of course, the main part of the factory. Where Tesco's is now, it's the front of it. That was the headquarters of, you know, where the management were of United Biscuits. And we were just behind that, adjacent to it. And we broadcast to Austerley and another base in Harlesden that they had. It was so successful, the staff turnover rate went down from something like 80% down to the 20s. They opened up another station to Manchester, one in Liverpool, and one at Toll Cross in Glasgow. And for me, certainly, like an apprenticeship.
And good morning at 5 minutes past nine. Let's have a little dreaming here with Glenn Campbell.
As I said, it was a breeding ground for commercial radio. People like Roger Scott came in, who became the second programme controller. Peter Young, wonderful Peter, and Adrian Love was at UBN. We had Giles Squire, who went up to Metro, of course. Nicky Horn, Pete Reeves and Roger Day went on to Piccadilly Radio. And latterly, people like Dale Winton and Steve Allen joined after I'd left. In fact, Dale told me on that one occasion we met, he said, he was my replacement.
Hi, this is Dale Winton. Some of you may recall it was my pleasure to host various programmes on UBN between August 74 and August 77. 3 years spent with people I still and always will regard as great friends.
So we had three studios. One of those was a news studio. What else did we have? We had an engineer, of course, two offices, properly run mini radio station. And you can imagine with names like I told you just now, we felt at the time, had it had a proper aerial, had we been on proper radio, we would have given Radio 1 a run for their money.
Good morning to Austerley. Good morning to Harlesden. Good morning and good listening.
Neil Spence, or Dave Dennis the Double D, he was a disciplinarian, but in a very nice and supportive way. He was very encouraging, but if you did something wrong, he'd let you know about it. As many people might know, he helped open up a broadcasting school in central London. And I'm sure ex-pupils of his will go along with what I've just said.
Makes you feel happy all over, doesn't he? Johnny Nash. His singing's pretty good as well, you know. Back to 1968. That's the vintage for that one. Johnny Nash and Hold Me Tight. And now we've got Herman's Hermits.
I suppose we all got itchy feet and wanted to broadcast through that big aerial to go on to proper radio. And some of us did. I remember Dave Anthony was one of the first. He went to Radio Luxembourg. And I remember Pete Reeves and I, in my first car, a little Honda, we drove out to Luxembourg to see him. Then Roger Day and Pete Reeves, they went off to Piccadilly Radio. I got the chance to go for an interview with Gillian Reynolds, highly esteemed journalist, radio broadcaster, Gillian Reynolds, the first programme controller first female programme controller when she was at Radio City. She'd be the first to say she knew nothing about the job, but she certainly grew into it. And I went for my interview with her in central London and got the job for Radio City. And I thought, wow, this is quite something. Radio City, where's that? Liverpool. So I went to live in Liverpool for about 6 or 7 months. I was put on all sorts of shows there. I remember I was on the opening day. I was doing a mid-morning show. Day one of City, it's a very foggy memory. I remember waking up and hearing the breakfast show and thinking, good grief, I'm on next. Luckily, I was with somebody. It was very much a magazine programme. And Gin Freeman, who was my partner in crime, and we'd never worked together before. Just, you know, go together, just, you know, hope for the best, really. She was lovely, and she did the more magazine-y type things, and you know, I was the DJ, I guess I played the music. I got there and I drove my car. It was a sports car, second-hand Lotus Elan. And I drove that up to Liverpool, and I didn't know where to go, where to park, and I found this waste ground where I saw some cars parked. So I parked it on this wasteland, and it was a soft top as well. So I had all my belongings, and about an hour and a half into the job, there was a phone call from the police saying, we believe somebody there owns this car which has been broken into. They ripped the top of it. And luckily, a policeman happened to be passing by and nabbed the guy and stopped all my belongings from being pinched. So that was my introduction to Radio City. It was obviously very nerve-wracking being, you know, my first proper radio job. It was in Stanley Street, quite an old building. Salubrious it was not. And it was on about 3 floors, I think. Gillian was the first female programme controller at ILR. Also, Nick Pollard. Now, Nick Pollard went on to be a big cheese at Sky News. And he was great, Nick, because when I was looking for somewhere to live in Liverpool, he offered one of his rooms in his house. Very nice gesture, I thought. Also in the lineup, if you like your football, you watch ITV, the great Clive Tildesley. He was one of our team. And I've always remembered the line that Clive came up with. It was during a World Cup game. England were playing. And he said, it makes me chuckle. He said, and for those who don't regularly watch football, England are in the white. We had Gillian Reynolds, programme controller. She was great, though, lovely. She put me in charge of finding a local voice because we had some from Birmingham. There's me from the Big Smoke. There were a couple of people there who resented me coming in. That wasn't easy to cope with. They were the few. Most of them were very, very welcoming. They were, you know, I have only the fondest memories of Liverpool and the people working there. And so anyway, I'm putting in charge of finding a local voice. All these cassettes and reel-to-reels were coming in. So I was ploughing through all these. It comes to the end of play on Friday. I've given up because there's nothing there I feel I can give to Gillian that feels right. And the very last, I think it was a cassette I heard, was so bad that I felt it was good. You know, it was one of those. And I said, Gillian, this is so bad, it's good. She hired him. And I was responsible for stopping Rob Jones from becoming an accountant.
Hi, this is Rob Jones, and welcome to the American Top 20. At number 20, the Commodores.
I had originally gone for the interview for Capital Radio before I got the Radio City job. And I remember Dave Cash was holding those interviews. I mean, the world and his radio wife went in for these interviews. We had to introduce a few records, had to read something out, had to do an interview, I believe. And I got a letter back basically telling me that I hadn't got the job for Capital, surprise, surprise, but I was on a shortlist. Now, I reckon this shortlist stretched from London to John O'Groats. I wonder if they sent that letter to everybody just to perk them up. But I remember distinctly talking to Peter Young, who by that point had left UBN and was doing some stuff at Capital Radio. So that inspired me. And then one evening, I got a call from Roger Scott, who, of course, I've worked with at UBN. And he said, look, they're looking for some summer relief. This would have been the summer of 1975. Capital had gone on air in 73. He said, I'll put in a word for you. Anyway, one thing led to another. I came down and I literally was just offered the job like that. They put me on overnights. And I remember my first show was overnights, sitting in for Sarah Ward with no needle time. We had to play library music or there was a get out. For some reason, and I still don't know quite why, you could play soundtracks. They didn't count towards needle time.
That's a climber this week. What a lovely song. In fact, it's a love song from Prelude. And I've got the feeling I've heard that somewhere before. I wonder who did that originally. Maybe they did. Nice
Capital
record, Prelude.
Had all sorts of different shows. We had to. That's what the IBA insisted upon. We were what they called a full service radio station. We had classical music on a Sunday. We had a soap opera in the first months. They also had a kids program on a Saturday morning that was hosted by the late Kerry Juby. He was off one Saturday. They asked me to fill in. Got to remember, at this point, Capital was not successful. They had no money. The three-day week was hitting them hard, so there was no advertising.
8 o'clock, Robin Houston with Capital News. Fords dominate the news again in London. The unions have appealed to 1,400 strikers to go back to work. Fords say if they don't, they'll stop pay talks.
So I'm doing this Kerry-go-round children's show. Somebody has said to me that they thought I might be doing an audition for The Breakfast Show. I said, that'd be ridiculous. I remember my guests were the New Seekers. I remember saying to them, I said, somebody told me this is an audition for The Breakfast Show. So I thought no more about it.
Honey, though I think about you day and night.
I did the show. On the Sunday, I got a call asking me to come in and see Michael Butt, the programme director.
I hear the golden oldies on the radio.
So I went in, up the Stairway of the Stars, the Busby Barclays staircase, and went in to see Michael Butt, who became Michael Barry. He was the crafty cook on television. Lovely, lovely guy. He sat me down and he offered me The Breakfast Show. David Simon started it, of course, Roger Scott and then Kenny Everett. I was expecting a lot of feedback, a lot of negativity, obviously, following somebody as great as Kenny. But it didn't happen. And to this day, I don't know why. Maybe they kept it from me. I don't know. There was no social media. And I'm very grateful for that now, because obviously there would have been a lot of vitriol, I think, because there is. It's the nature of the game now, isn't it? Sadly.
Roxy Music and Love is the Drug. It's 21 minutes now before 8 o'clock. And if you're going off to school, and maybe you've got a few minutes before you have to catch the bus, well, hang on just a moment, because what I'd like to know is, of any special events that's being organised at your school this week that may be open to members of the public...
I should go back, because when I was at Radio City, I woke up one morning and I heard on our news on Radio City that Kenny Everett, who was then doing The Breakfast Show on Capital, had... How can I delicately put this? He'd taken too many pills. He hadn't intended to, do the nasty deed or anything like that. He and early mornings weren't made for each other. I mean, you see, he was still great, don't get me wrong, but the hours I'm talking about, the pressure was too much. I think he was relying on perhaps pills to keep him going, maybe a few too many drinks or whatever. And one day, that was the end for him. And I heard about this, and of course the press tried to make more of it to say, oh, he's attempted suicide. It wasn't like that at all. And I remember saying to my friend there that morning, as I heard this news, I said, my God, I pity the poor bloke who has to, or woman, who has to take over from him. And about 3 or 4 months later, that was me. And not only did I sort of have to fight that corner on my own radio station, but of course, I had Noel Edmonds on Radio 1 at the time. Oh, some lightweight called Terry Wogan on Radio 2. And again, I remember saying to somebody, I said, look, if the figures only go down a little bit, I will feel that I've achieved something. That will be fine with me. And you know what happened? They went up.
You'll enjoy your breakfast show with Graham.
The whole time I was on The Breakfast Show, and I did two lots of 5 years, so the best part of 10. It was only ever myself and a producer. One of my first was Simon Booker. In those days, I used to go home after the programme with all the new records that would come in. You know, the early days, it was like Christmas, you know, all these fabulous new records. I would religiously listen to every 45 and every track on every album that came in, because in those days, we had some freedom. I would go home, do the playlist on a piece of paper. Obviously, you'd have your A and B records colour-coded in those days, I think, something like that. Anyway, so obviously I would adhere to that. I wasn't stupid, you know, we had to play the hits because they got the music policy wrong in the first stage, shall we say, of Capital. It was just too laid back. So, yes, I'd plan everything out. I picked the music. I picked the oldies and an album track every now and every hour as well. There's at least one album track. What I enjoy the most is listening to new songs the next day. Take them in and sharing them with the audience. I know that sounds a bit of a cliche, but that's what I did. You remember Fat Larry's band, Zoom? That was an album track that I was playing on the show. I kept saying, oh, goodness, why don't they release this as a single? And eventually it was, and I think it got to number two. Huge, huge, huge hit. They sent me the disc in a frame. I've got it right behind me now. I can see it now. Oh, we went through so many features. We had so many competitions. One of them was the D Machine, which I still use to this very day, where people had to try and crack a code. If it wasn't guessed that day, the price of it would go up a pound. One that lasted for ages and ages, because the codes had to start with a number, was 36IOSF. This lasted for well over a year. Nobody could crack it. And it turned out to be 36 inches of Samantha Fox. You might remember she was a Sun Page 3 girl. Oh, what other things did we have? Silly things like horoscopes, but they were very big, the horoscopes. And I used to say, and now Aries, and a little jingle would go ding ding. And I, you know, had to read out all the various horoscopes of the day, but they were incredibly popular.
And I've got four good stars on the programme today. And first off is Libra. And Librans are going to find, they're going to find people charming to chat to today. And if you're a Libra, you'll have no trouble in collecting followers or admirers.
We had the Flying Eye. That was the aircraft that flew over London. I'm sure health and safety wouldn't allow it anymore. Because in all weathers, my first Flying Eye was Brian Wolfe. He used to take off from Elstree and he was followed by Commander Kane. They took prize winners up, special guests up who would throw up all over them. It wasn't an easy job while trying to spy on London's landmarks as well.
Independent Radio News at 6, Douglas Cameron.
While I was there, it was always Douglas Cameron. Dougie was my newsreader. He was IRN, of course. He was doing the breakfast show on LBC. I used to play charity football with a lot of the guys from Radio 1. We always used to meet up on a Sunday and play some charity football. I remember once Douglas Cameron was involved and he invited us all back to tea. And such a lovely guy. He was as nice as he sounded on the radio.
Independent Radio News, it's 7:03.
I don't think that we realised how big Capital Radio was at the time. I think I first realised it when the mailbag started coming in, and it was all mail in those days, and some of the... Gerald Harper did our Champagne and Roses show, Champagne and Roses, on the Sunday. And his mailbag, just giving away a bottle of champagne, it was huge. I mean, it's just hard to imagine now.
That was Joan Armour Trading. Now, listen, I know I don't usually tell people they've won a bottle of champagne till much later on in the programme, but there's a very good reason, because one of the winners this week will do the rest at the normal time, but she happens to be... Now, be careful.
But I think I realised how big it was when I heard that people at Radio 1 used to tune into Capital, because we'd become the new cool. Capital was big, and that's when I suddenly realised, wow, I'm part of Capital Radio. If I'm asked, did I ever consider myself well-known? I said, you know, yes, I was, because I was fortunate enough to be in the right place at the right time to have this breakfast show. But there were many, many better broadcasters than me who would have suited it better at that time. There's no doubt about it. Yes, I evolved into it. And yes, I became very well known. It just sort of crept up bit by bit, really. I would never allow it to go to my head. I just always felt terribly grateful to be doing what I was doing. And I look back now and I think, wow, I suppose I was famous in people's eyes. And it's now when something is put online about the old days and people pour in with, oh, we used to wake up to you. And, you know, that means everything. Caroline, when I was, a schoolboy listening to the pirate radio stations, and they were all my heroes, these guys who I'd eventually, end up working with. There was Tommy Vance. I always remember Tommy Vance. after a few months of being on The Breakfast Show, he had a word with me, because people are always trying to help you. And he said to me, and I've never forgotten this, he said, they won't get to know you properly for a year. You know, you think after a couple of shows they know who you are. Oh, no, absolutely not. And he was absolutely right.
The Johnny Rotten Show, the punk and his music.
I ended up working with the people who had inspired me to do what I eventually did. You know, listening to those pirate radio stations and my heroes. I ended up working with people like Dave Cash, Kenny Everett, you know, Kenny and Cash in the same office. Added to which, people I'd worked with at UBN. Added to that, into the mix, you know, great broadcasters like Topless Tony Myatt. Tony Myatt, on his Late Show, he discovered, as far as radio was concerned, he discovered Kate Bush. He was the first to play Wuthering Heights, something she never forgot, and was a regular visitor to his show.
Graham D.
You didn't used to tell jokes like that, did you, when you read the news?
Certainly
all,
not.
It was all terribly pomp and circumstance, wasn't it?
No, I used to finish off the news with a merry quip. At least it was a quip. Well, I'm ready for my first insult of the month.
Well, I was just going to talk about you reading the news.
Yes.
You know, because I remember seeing you when I was at school, reading the news. Kindergarten, that was, of course.
Yes, I shouldn't have been allowed on. I was only 9 myself.
Now, I grew up as a kid watching Michael Aspel on the television. If you told me one day I'd be working with one of the greatest broadcasters, I wouldn't have believed you. Not only working with him, but on air with him. Yeah, he would follow with the mid-morning show. After the news, this was. I was only really meant to do the weather, but it turned into something that was very popular, this handover. And it was just an innocuous chat, but it was like father and son. You know, I was the rookie and he was Michael Aspel, done in a really nice way. And, of course, he had all the lines. He was an expert at coming up with, you know, the punchlines. It was a must-listen at 9 o'clock.
Well, have we got things for you today? I think you've probably got just about everything you've ever heard all banged together in 3 hours, including all the old goofs that people have done over the last few years. If you've ever heard anything that's made you laugh on the radio, you'll probably hear it again today. It's total repeats today, because me and my staff here are going to get diddly, you see? So you're listening, boss? I don't care anymore!
Kenny was a really, really gentle soul. We went out a couple of times to restaurants, and he wasn't your laugh-a-minute type comedian. He was just a very nice, down-to-earth guy. He obviously had his troubles. He was trying to find himself, and he was a total genius at his art. We all wanted to be a Kenny Everett. Having done some Prince's Trust shows, presented them, they every now and again would hold party, a get-together, to say thank you. And on one occasion, it was held in Oxford Street in London at Air Studios, which were owned by Sir George Martin. Princess Diana was there, and she sees me early on in the evening, and she dashes over to me. She says, Graham, are you going to play a record for me on your show? Of course, yes, Your Royal Highness, what would you like me to play? She had a long think about it, and a few names came to mind. She loved Neil Diamond, I remember. I think Barry Manilow as well. Anyway, after much thought, she decided it had to be Uptown Girl, which, of course, is hugely appropriate. I said, well, you know, OK, what time would you like it? And she said, around about 8:15, would that be good? Fine. So after the event, we're all outside on Oxford Street, and the press are there because, you know, the big names of the day were at this event. The press were going up to them, and I was left on my own. And I thought, oh, well, actually, I've got quite a good story for you. You should have asked me. But anyway, so it comes to the next day. Just as the 8 o'clock news comes on, read as always by Dougie, Douglas Cameron, I'm preparing, you know, obviously this Uptown Girl, making sure it's going to be there for 8:15. And one of the last things Dougie mentions on the 8 o'clock news, bearing in mind that I was the only one that knew about playing this record for the princess, he announces that I'm going to do just that. And I'm flabbergasted. How did he know? I was the only one. And I hadn't told him. So I bring forward the record because he's told everybody I'm going to play it. So I played it right after the news. I said, yeah, well, this is the record. You want to know what it is? It's this one, played Uptown Girl, Billy Joel for Princess Diana. And at the end of it, I came out of it and I said, so there you are, Princess Diana. That's your request today. Uptown Girl, Billy Joel, and I hope he appreciates the royalties, which was one of my better lines. All good things come to an end. I'd been on The Breakfast Show for 5 years. I was just told, look, we're going to make a change. You know, we think it's time to just refresh the station. I thought, you know, tail between my legs. I knew it would come. Dave Cash left. I think he must have gone down to the West Country. They put me on his very successful lunchtime show, which was notorious for having cash on delivery, COD, COD, as Christopher Rainbow used to sing. So that was the end of my first stint at Breakfast. Mike Smith took over. One of the hierarchy at Capital, who I knew didn't think I should be there, he came up to me. I'm in the office, feeling quite emotional, obviously. And he said, I didn't think you were right at the beginning, but I was wrong. And I've never forgotten that. Then a couple of years later, Mike Smith went off to Radio 1. And to my huge surprise, I can see the room I was in now. And the phone goes, and it's the programme controller at the time, Jo Sanderland. And she said, Graham, we'd like you to come back and do The Breakfast Show. I could not believe it. I said, are you sure? And yeah, so I went back and I did a second stint, nearly 5 years of that. Again, you know, it was like almost like starting over again. But they knew me. A lot of people knew me. But then I was also reaching out to a new generation.
You see, chart rockers, the Cult Group, are going to be paid with tractors when they play in South Korea. Currency restrictions stop us bringing, being paid in
Chris
cash.
Tarrant had joined Capital. He had done... Jo Sanderland had brought him in to do the lunchtime show. He'd been huge on Tiz Was, of course, and that she felt he'd be great on Capital. He was brought in to do a kind of wacky lunchtime show. It didn't work. So then she had the idea of trying him out on Breakfast, which, of course, did work. So that was the end of me on Breakfast. And I remember my very final Breakfast show. Well, how could you forget it? Because you can imagine the emotion of the last half an hour. I remember at 8:30, I was doing the news headlines and the door flung open. And who should walk through it with the red light on, of course, because I was in the middle of the headlines, and I look out of the corner of my eye, and it's Princess Diana. I knew she was coming in. It was a very well-kept secret. But she had an acquaintance who worked at Capital Radio, and she asked if she could come in for my final Breakfast Show. I have to tell you that previously she had called me, and I picked up the phone, the internal phone, and I said, hello. And she said, oh, Graham, hello, it's the Princess of Wales here. I'd just like to wish you a happy birthday. So I thought she was one of the girls. It sounded very similar to Nikki, who was one of our secretaries. So I said, oh, yeah, very good, Nikki. Good wind-up. And she said, no, it is the Princess of Wales. Really, I've just called to wish you a happy... Before she could say anything else, I suddenly realised the record was running out. I said, Your Royal Highness, could you hang on? I've got to play a commercial break. She hangs on while I'm playing this commercial break, and I come back and I said, I'm terribly sorry about that. She's giggling away. She's adorable, great sense of humour. And yes, a couple of times on my birthday she rang me up and she came in. It was a well-kept secret on this final show of mine. I think that was around about 1987, and she sat on the sofa, you know, opposite the panel, and I had, for the last half an hour, a Princess Diana there, and she had her handbag, and out of her handbag, she took a cassette, and it was the soundtrack to Top Gun. Could you play something off of it? Not realising I couldn't play cassettes in the studio. I think it was Harold Faltermeyer, the instrumental from Top Gun she wanted played, and I thought, how am I going to get round this? My producer at the time was Mick Brown, Mick and Pat Sharp, and he was my producer at the time, and he ran down to the music library, and he got out the soundtrack of Top Gun, and I can't play the song she wants, it just won't sound right. So over something, you know, some housekeeping that I had to do, I played this instrumental and sort of brought it up and down between words so she could vaguely hear it. I think she had the headphones on. She was in her element, she loved it. So I had her on one part of the sofa and Chris Tarrant on the other, who'd come in to, you know, announce the fact that he was going to be taking over on the Monday. After the show, Diana went downstairs into the office. We all had a cup of tea. I've got a photograph of her and me sitting together. That is also on the wall behind me right now. the gasps you can imagine of all the staff not knowing. Even Jo Sanderlands wasn't aware. I don't think that went down well at all. She came in her jeans and a sweater. Her bodyguard took the photograph. No, she was adorable, just lovely. But that was quite a last half hour. Well, you see all sides of man and woman management. Some good, some not so good. The good ones, I think, have had a certain amount of experience on the radio, know what it's like. And we're a tender bunch, really. It's not the ego being massaged, it's just being given a bit of confidence to carry on. And a word in the wrong direction, if it's said in the wrong way, can have the opposite effect. And of course, vice versa. The best managers are the ones who inspire. And if you've done something wrong, they'll say, OK, but you did this right. It's that kind of thing. Those are the people I love working for. And, you know, you get all sorts in life, don't you?
You got All Hit Radio Capital Gold right here. It's 7:15.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
So Breakfast and Capital FM came to an end, and of course this fledgling Capital Gold was starting.
Downtown.
In 1988 it was. So I was moved from the FM side, which was for, you know, the new cool kids on the block, and I and many of the others were moved on to the new Capital Gold. When I say many others, I mean we are talking about fantastic broadcasters. It was such a great lineup. There was Tony Blackburn, he was doing Breakfast. Mike Reed was there. Diddy David Hamilton. Paul Burnett. Kenny Everett was on there. Latterly, on Capital Gold, Kenny was doing the afternoon show. Last show he did. And I would take over on Drive Time. And we used to do these handovers together. And then, of course, he became very ill. And we know what happened.
Kenny Everett, radio and TV legend, has died. He passed away peacefully in his sleep at home, finally losing his long battle against AIDS. He was 50. The way he treated being HIV positive showed true style. He won worldwide admiration for the courageous way he dealt with dying, always joking and refusing to become depressed.
I'll probably go before you and I'll prepare your speech. You have to be philosophical or you go potty.
Dear God in heaven, let this show go okay.
Paul Gambaccini came into Capital Gold. It was a great, great lineup, and one by one, it kind of got dismantled, which was a shame. I'm not sure why. Maybe money came into it, and they were looking for cheaper options, but it was lovely while it lasted. 1992, I left. It was, funnily enough, I left the week I got married. And so I thought, oh, what am I going to do when I come back? What is there? And I'd heard about the new Virgin Radio that was going to be starting up. So I got in touch with Virgin, but then I heard nothing. But one day, I got a call from Richard Skinner. He was one of the joint programme directors. There were two. There was Richard and John Revel, who were in the early days of Virgin 1215, this is, of course. And Richard called me in. I went to see him. He said, yeah, look, you know, we'd love you to join. He gave me the Weekend Breakfast Show. Now, we launched Virgin on the 30th of April, 1993.
Well, good afternoon. This is Richard Skinner. We are now live in Studio One Golden Square in the heart of Soho, and this is the Radio Revolution. From now on, it's for real. Virgin 1215 is the UK's first new national pop and rock station in more than 25 years.
It was the day before, I think, we launched. We were told, now, don't bring the party back to the station. Be professional. Don't celebrate on air, as it were. Now, there was, that day on the 30th, we did an outside broadcast. Richard Skinner had been the opening voice at 12:15, obviously, Virgin 12:15. And at the Piccadilly Theatre, which was literally across the road from number one Golden Square, they had a big party night. Big guests, music, loads of people invited to come and launch the station at the Piccadilly Theatre, broadcast live as well. So I had to then come in and do the next day's breakfast show. So I left the party fairly early. In fact, I've got a photograph of me at that launch party with my wife in it, Richard Branson and Jono Coleman. Because Jono, along with Russ Williams, the Russ and Jono show, did the first weekday show, Monday to Friday, which I always thought was incredibly underrated. I thought they really worked well together. But that's a little aside. We'd started on a Friday, opened up. My breakfast show followed on the Saturday. So I was the first breakfast show on Virgin 1215. So I left this party early, went home, got up at that, you know, the usual 4 o'clock hour. And I turned on the radio, the Virgin, and all I could hear was static. I thought, is it my radio? So I get ready, get into the car, more and more static coming out. So I think, what is going on here? So now it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Who do I call? I didn't have mobile phones in those days. So I got to the station, and I think on the ring main it was coming through, but it wasn't going out. Anyway, so I go on the air at 6 o'clock. And I don't know whether it's just the London transmitter that isn't working or whether none of it is working around the country, because, of course, it was a national radio station on AM. Yeah, I know, a rock station on AM. Still crazy. Even back in those days, it was crazy. So I didn't know, what do I do? So I just went on and did the show regardless. When I first arrived at the station, bearing in mind, the party must not come back to the radio station. We had to make our way over bodies, prostrate bodies, all over the place. The stench of beer. Something had happened. The switching back to the studio hadn't gone right. So from the Piccadilly Theatre and the party, back to the studio, somebody pulled the wrong switch. I managed to put out about the last hour and a half of my very first breakfast show. And the first hour and a half to 2 hours were not heard.
24 minutes past 1 o'clock, Bank Holiday Monday with Graham Dean and Virgin 1215. Great music, well chosen. And we're going to do the rundown in just a second. So there we had Space Odyssey at number 41. David Bowie, are you ready?
I have lovely memories of Virgin. Wonderful studio as well. We're looking out over Golden Square. Quite an old building. What a setting, you know. If it's all about location, 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 there isn't a greater location than that. A capital. And my Radio City days, there wasn't a window from the studio. And I think that's so important, especially if you're on local radio, actually, because then you can empathise with the audience. You know, what are we doing? Look at this snow coming down, that kind of thing. They were a great team, both on and off the air. There came this FM licence came up for grabs. I don't think anybody at the station expected that we would get it. But, you know, playing the rockier side of music, it was needed. Maybe the powers that be realised that we needed a better outlet than AM. And we got this FM outlet. That was a huge lift to morale. Because, you know, trying to listen to that kind of music on AM, it didn't do much for the morale, really, because you wonder, well, who's going to enjoy it?
From April the 10th, you can hear classic album tracks and the best new music on Virgin 105.8 FM.
So, yeah, I was there for about 6 or 7 years. And towards the end, Capital were going to come in and take over Virgin. And then the 11th hour, Chris Evans comes in and takes over. And latterly, when he was ensconced, of course, he came in to do breakfast, and they eventually decided to split the stations. So you'd have the AM side, of which people like myself, the older fraternity, and Nicky Horn, I remember, we went on the AM side in this very small studio. And then eventually they combined it and had to say goodbye to the surplus staff, of which I know Nicky and I were. So that was the end of me on Virgin. And then about a year later, I was lucky because Magic was starting, which took over from Melody in London.
Christopher Columbus from Dinah Washington. Just before that, Hello Mary Lou from Niels Thuesen. We heard Being With You from Smokey Robinson and Forever Blowing Bubbles, the Clark Sisters. 104.9 FM, this is Melody Radio. Good morning, I'm Jonathan
Mark
Izard.
Mark Story, who'd been one of my finest producers on my breakfast show at Capital Radio, was involved with that. Francis Curry was there as well. I joined the last week of Melody sort of morphing into Magic. And so I was playing a bit of Melody type music with a bit of what was to be Magic music. I remember once during this final week, before it actually became Magic, playing a record by Crowded House and getting a very irate letter saying, I'm listening, I do not want to hear songs like Crowded House. And quite frankly, I felt sorry for him, because if you're tuning into Melody Radio, you don't want to hear Crowded House, because everybody else is playing that. But then, you know, a few days later, we became Magic. The door opened while I was doing drive time on what was Melody at that point, and Mark Story walked in. He sat down. I thought, oh dear, here we go. What have you got for me, Mark? lovely Irish sense of humour, love Mark to pieces. And he said, how would you feel about doing the breakfast show? When you've done so many years of 4 o'clock in the morning, you just go, your first reaction is, you've got to be joking. So he takes me out to lunch the next day. And of course, you know, he can persuade anybody to do anything. I spent a couple of years, I think, on breakfast then. It wasn't like any other breakfast show I'd done. It was a very lonely breakfast show on Magic because I was on my own. It was just me and the music. We had an assistant in the office outside who put the travel together. I read the news headlines, and that was it. It was just me and the music, and they wanted a lot of music. They didn't really want a lot of personality. So I was kind of like between the devil and the deep blue sea. It was always a little bit difficult for me. Latterly on The Breakfast Show, they then wanted more personality, but I worked much better as part of a team. And I found that incredibly difficult. You know, they'd say, well, go home, come up with a few ideas for tomorrow. I don't work like that. I love bouncing off different people, getting their ideas. But, you know, it worked pretty well. Eventually came off Breakfast after 2 or 3 years onto Drive Time. Where do all breakfast show presenters go? There you go, to Drive Time. I remember I always overdid the travel, having reams of this paper. And, you know, just forgetting to cross out bits that really didn't matter. But I just felt it was my duty to let them know everything.
Broken down vehicles on the A10 at the M25 interchange, Waltham Cross. So that's causing southbound delays. The M1 slow south towards Junction 9 near Redbourne. And going west on the North Circular.
After Magic. Well, Gavin McCoy rang me and he said, Smooth Radio, London, starting up this year. This was 2007. We'd like you to come over. I'd never been asked to leave a radio station to join a new one before. So this was very new ground for me. I used to very secretly cycle into Magic. Before going into Magic, I would go off for a few meetings to see Gavin and meet the team down at Smooth Radio in Castlereagh Street, wasn't it? Then cycle back to Magic. But I felt terribly, terribly guilty. I eventually told them, I remember the day I went in to tell them, I felt so guilty. But they, you know, they're very good about it. They're all grown-ups. I went down and joined. I had to do some gardening leave for about 3 or 4 months. That was a bit messy. But anyway, it was New Year's Day. I remember probably nobody listening, starting at 6 o'clock in the morning. I remember going on with a little piece that we'd pre-done. In fact, I'd pre-recorded that show. And I played a bit of Pilots, Ho, 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 It's Magic, with the needle scratching along it going, Ho, 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 It's Magic. Not anymore, it isn't. Lovely people there, behind and in front of the microphone. There was Martin Collins there in the early days. Mark Goody had joined as well. And the late Kevin Greening. Oh, sad that was. I remember it was just before Christmas and Kevin was there and he was doing the afternoon show, Kevin being Kevin, so unique. And I just have this, I'll never forget it, the image saying, good luck next week, Graham, he said. He was just going out of the door, waved to me, Happy Christmas, Happy New Year. And that was the last we saw of him. A couple of days later, he was dead.
Love life, love life, love music, smooth radio.
One of the most horrible words in radio, consolidation. And GMG, who were our owners, they decided to do just that and turn it into a quasi-national radio station. And they made many of us on, you know, not just our Smooth in London, but all the other Smooths as well, made them redundant. I was one of them. That was in 2010. I had a last-minute reprieve. Tony Blackburn was doing the Weekend Breakfast Show, as I mentioned. He had had the call from Radio 2 to go to do Pick of the Pops, which he said he thought at least 1 minute about before he said, yes, please.
Hi there, Tony Blackburn here. I'm delighted to be a new presenter on Pick of the Pops.
Which left a gap for the Weekend Breakfast Show. So I did that and it lasted, I don't know, lasted for about a year. And I actually really enjoyed that. I thought it went very well. I've never really found out why they didn't hang on to me. They just got somebody else. I think it was run by the two Johns who were from the north. And I think that they perhaps preferred to use the northern presenters And I think that might have had a little bit to do with it. I hope that was the reason anyway. But listen, it was great to get that reprieve. I loved my time there.
So London Smooth Breakfast. Hello, hope your weekend went well. This is Graham Dean and it's 102.2 Smooth Radio. There's the Four Tops. 6 minutes past 6 o'clock. Yes, I wasn't expecting to have to scrape the windscreen today because, you know, talking about...
Well, after
about
Smooth, I was thinking, well, I'm not sure where there is to go now. Something comes along. Never, never give up. Of course, it's, you know, the more people you know, the better it is. That makes life a lot easier because people will remember you. Don't give up. There is always a light at the end of that, what seems a very dark tunnel. I didn't think that at the time when I left Smooth because so fewer radio stations at the time, so fewer outlets to hop aboard on and becoming very wary of your age as well. But one day, it's always one day, I get a call from Mark Carter, who's the deputy editor at BBC Radio Sussex and Surrey. He used to listen to me on Capital, and he asked me to come in and do a show one morning, for which I had to go down to Brighton. And I did their mid-morning show. Then he asked me to do something from their other base in Guildford, which is nearer to where I work. And then there was this slot between 12 and 2 on a Saturday that came up for grabs. And it's turned into one of the best shows for me that I've ever had to do. We just dreamt up what would be good for it. And I thought it would be lovely to have a show that emulated a US diner, the kind of songs that you'd hear in a diner in the 50s, early 60s on one of those jukeboxes. It evolved into a two-hour show playing 50s and 60s in the first hour, 70s and 80s in the second hour. But what I loved about it, and it harks back to being able in the old days to choose some of the records, they gave me carte blanche. They said, you can build it, you go ahead. They trusted me to do it. It was about eight and a half years of doing this programme.
Well, I don't know about you, I used to be able to get up there. Not anymore. Bit of a struggle. The Rubettes, Sugar Baby Love, they were a bunch of sessions.
And the lovely thing that came out of doing the BBC show was getting a call from BBC Radio Solent to do their Sunday Night Nostalgia show. Now, I love that kind of music, and their usual host, Bob Roberts, was taking the summer of 2016 off. Would I like to do it? It was called, at that time, called Unforgettable, playing the Great American Songbook. And when I tell you that one of the pieces of music that I absolutely adored as a kid, my father brought it back on a long player when I was about 6 or 7 years old, was Songs for Swinging Lovers by Frank Sinatra, with those wonderful Nelson Riddle arrangements. And I didn't know why I loved it at the age of 6 or 7. I do now. I've got you under my skin. I'm talking to you during the COVID-19 crisis. And so for the time being, they've had to rest my show because they brought in a uniform BBC local radio schedule. My two-hour block on a Saturday afternoon just didn't fit the bill. And they got their main presenters to fill that, which, again, I totally understand. But my goodness, I miss it because I miss putting the show together. You know, being a music man, I really miss that. And I'm thinking again, I've got to think about being thought of as vintage. I know that I can do it. And a lot of us, like so many of the people I mentioned before, wonderful broadcasters who aren't doing it today, like Paul Burnett, like David Hamilton and others, that could be and would be so popular with the audience, there should be an outlet for them. I mentioned Melody Radio before, how I'd love to see a contemporary version, I do mean contemporary with a capital C, a contemporary version of what was Melody Radio nationwide, run by the BBC for the older age group, playing the Great American Songbook, playing the great soundtracks. If so, I'm your man. Of course, there are various spells in a career where you think, am I doing really what I want to be doing here? Playing big sweeps of music, your mind turning off and being told to shut up and not speak for longer than 20 seconds. I felt that I wasn't communicating in the way that was my strength with the audience. Now, I'm totally aware that people would tune into stations like Smooth or Magic because they wanted the music. And I think a lot of people listen, put that on, and I don't mean this in any insulting way whatsoever. I think a lot of it is more background music. Whereas when you're on a breakfast show or even a drive time show, people listen more. They're listening to more of what you're saying. When I was just having to play long sweeps of music, I found that very frustrating. Well, I'd like to be remembered as being a bit of a chum to people on the radio, giving people a laugh at times, making them smile. Somebody once told me, who was running the Princess Trust show one night, came back afterwards and said, Princess Diana said, you make her laugh in the morning. And that meant so much. And if I could make somebody, you know, brighten somebody's day, oh, this sounds terribly cliched and cheesy, but if people come back to you and said, oh, I really love that, or, and I'll tell you what makes a real difference, and very much with the current show I'm doing on the BBC at Sussex and Surrey, they give me the freedom to play not only the hits of the past, but also what I call the unlucky misses. So those records you never hear anymore. And those are the ones that the listeners respond to. And if somebody comes up to me or writes to me and says, I haven't heard that song for ages, it was great to hear again, that's all I ask for.
Graham Dean. For more in this series, follow the Radio Moments Conversations podcast. I'm David Lloyd, and if you do enjoy reminiscing about radio, then do grab my book. It's called Radio Moments, looking back through my own eyes from inside and outside the industry at the last 50 years of UK radio. It's available now in paperback and ebook.